Good morning. This morning I'm reading from Proverbs 12, verses 14 to 23. From the fruit of their lips, people are filled with good things, and the work of their hands brings them reward. The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. Fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. An honest witness tells the truth, but a false witness tells lies. The word of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only a moment. Deceit is in the hearts of those who plot evil, but those who promote peace have joy. No harm overtakes the righteous, but the wicked have their fill of trouble. The Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in people who are trustworthy. The prudent keeps their knowledge to themselves, but a fool's heart blurts out folly. I'm also going to read from Proverbs 15, verses 1 through 7. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise adorns knowledge, but the mouth of the fool gushes folly. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. The soothing tongue is a tree of life, but a perverse tongue crushes the spirit. A fool spurns a parent's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. The house of the righteous contains great treasure, but the income of the wicked brings ruin. The lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not upright.
Well, as we look at the book of Proverbs, and we've seen after the introduction how one gains wisdom, then we saw what the Proverbs say about the fool, because there's the wise and the foolish portrayed in the book of Proverbs. It's a book that shows us two pathways in life. And then we saw that the first theme that we looked at last week was all the way through the book of Proverbs, if you're going to be wise or a fool, then that is then fleshed out in different ways. And the first way that we saw was either to be proud, to be a fool. Your pride is a foolish way to live, and humbleness is the wise way. Today we're going to look at the power of words. And it's a major theme through the book of Proverbs. We just read two parts to you, but there's much else there about the tongue and the use of words, either the foolish or the wise use of words. Marg and I were at a conference in New Zealand when we were there in Christian work, and Howard Hendricks, when he was alive, he was a lecturer from Dallas Theological Seminary. And he was over visiting and he was speaking, and he said that when he was young, a little kid at school, he was a really bad boy. He got into so much trouble and he was always pulled up in front of the headmaster and things like that. Then the next year when he went back to the next class up, his teacher, after the class, pulled him aside and said, "Howie, I've heard some things about you. I've heard that cause trouble, and you don't always listen to what you're told, do what you're told, and so on." And this teacher said, "I don't believe a word of it. I think you're going to be a really good student, and you're going to learn a lot this year. I'm sure that's all a whole lot of lies. I'm not going to listen to all that. I don't believe it. And that's all basically the teacher said. You know, Howard Hendricks, in his telling his story, said, you know, those words stuck with me. That teacher believed in me. And so I did everything I could to live up to what that teacher expected of me. And it changed his life. It totally changed his life. Words have incredible power. Teachers' words have the power to stretch the minds and imaginations of students. Politicians' words have the power to win an election. Lawyers' words have the power to convince a jury. Counselors' words have the power to inspire and cause life change. Parents' words have the power to build up or break down the very spirits of their children. There's a legend, it's just a legend, but a king apparently sent some of his court out into the kingdom and said, I want you to find me the most, the greatest, most valuable thing in my kingdom. What should we value the most? And they came back after a long search and said, King, Your Honor, it's the tongue. And then he sent them out again, so I try and find the most destructive thing in our kingdom, and you got it all together. I know you know. It's the tongue. When they came back, they said that. And it's so true. The power for greatness and goodness and the power for evil and destruction are in the tongue. So today we look at the power of the tongue, or the power of words. And first of all, I want to see the power of the tongue for evil. Then I want to see the potential of the tongue for good. And then we want to look at the prudent use of our tongues. So first of all, the power of the tongue for evil. The tongue, the Bible, Proverbs says in chapter 18, verse 21, the tongue has the power of life and death. It is a powerful instrument. Some of the greatest men and women who have ever lived gained much of their prominence and power by persuasive words, for good or ill. 60 million people died in the Second World War. 60 million all up died. And the source of that greatly, not totally, but greatly is attributed to the inflammatory speeches by Adolf Hitler. He stirred up his people and caused such hatred and caused such a movement in warfare against people like the Jews, but also wider than that, trying to take over the whole world of the day. And it was the tongue that had such power in galvanizing those people together to do what he wanted them to do. In Proverbs 6, we read, there is six things. Remember, we quoted this last week when we looked at pride. The first in the list was pride. The six things that God hates, seven that are abomination to him, that he totally hates. And three of them relate to the tongue out of the seven. Wouldn't you know it? Three. A lying tongue, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. And by the way, when God, in the book of Romans, when God is, through the Apostle Paul, writing and communicating to the people the gospel, and when in the part of the gospel where he talks about the sinfulness of humankind and the importance of understanding that we are sinful, in chapter 3, he quotes from the Old Testament a number of little quotes from different Bible verses to show how sinful we are and the importance of sin, and nearly all of them have to do with the tongue. He says, here's the evidence that you're a sinner. Listen, there is no one righteous, not one. Their throats are open graves, their tongues practice deceit. The venom of asps or vipers is on their lips. Their mouth is full of curses and bitterness. And then he says, every mouth will be stopped and or the whole world will be held accountable to God. So God looks at us and he judges us by our words. Every word, Jesus said, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account of on the day of judgment. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. The power of the evil power of the tongue, the power of the tongue to hurt. First of all, the power to hurt, because it says in Proverbs 12:18, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Have you ever had an experience? Excuse me, I've got an itchy nose. Have you ever had an experience where someone has said something, or the way it was said, or you overheard it said, or it was reported to you that it was said, something that cut deep? That kind of sword, as it says, reckless words pierce like a sword that cuts deep. It affects us emotionally. It affects our friendships, our relationships with others, because what we hear does that. One time, Mark and I were talking to someone on a Skype kind of thing, and they didn't turn it off at the end. And they didn't realize they hadn't turned it off. By the way, always check. And said something that really hurt us. And it really shakes you. It cuts deep. We live in a world where we've heard all about bullying, and there is bullying. And unfortunately, with social media and with other forms of communication, words have caused suicides of young girls and young guys who have been bullied with words and have then taken their lives. As it says, the power of life and the power of death is in the tongue. And of course, we say tongue, but it's written word is the same. In fact, it can be even more powerful. You know the old saying, I grew up saying this, oh, sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. And I learned that somewhere in primary school. I don't know, but I used to spout it around a bit because I thought it was great. But it's a falsehood. It's naive falsehood. Because sticks and stones may break our bones, but words hurt the most. Isn't that true? You can get over a broken bone, but sometimes the cut of a word can stay with you for the rest of your life. Matthew 12:36, I already quoted this, but people will give account on the day of judgment for every careless word. Just a careless word. But he's going to hold us accountable for that. The power to wound and destroy others, but also the power to cause quarrels. It says in Proverbs 16:28, a perverse man stirs up dissension and a gossip separates close friends. And also the power to hurt yourself, that when you're a fool and you have no rein over your tongue, an evil man is trapped by his sinful talk, and a fool's lips bring him strife. His mouth invites a beating, and a fool's mouth is his undoing. Somebody has said some people's tongues are long enough to hang themselves with. Anyway, secondly, the power not just to hurt, but the power to influence. And here we talk about gossip. The word gossip in the Hebrew language is whisperer. So it comes from the idea of somebody whispering to somebody else something about somebody. And so it may be true what is shared in secret or what is shared in gossip, but it's hurtful. And so, but it's not always true. Sometimes it's half-truths or innuendos. I was pulled up by a lady when I was really young in my Christian faith, and I thought our church was the only one in the town that preached the gospel. And I was at a Christmas program with other churches, and I happened to say, and she overheard it, well, we're in a church that preaches the gospel. And the innuendo was that all the other churches didn't. And of course that is so not true, but it was an innuendo. It was the truth, you know, we're in a church that preaches the gospel, but the inference is obviously that the others don't, so we've got it. It was pride and gossip, or falsehood. Half-truths and innuendos, distorting the truth or exaggerating. The young preacher just starting out and really trying hard and going for it, and somebody whispers to somebody else, you know, that young guy, he likes the sound of his own voice. Immediately the person who hears that has a mental picture indelibly put on their mind about that young guy. How on earth would we know the motivation of that young man? He might be seeking to honor and glorify his God, but try his best to be a good preacher. But that little word into the ear of somebody else will affect their attitude towards that young man forever. Pierre de Marivaux said this quote, "Some people will believe anything if it's whispered to them." I like that. It's true. And so it says in Proverbs 18:8, "The words of a gossip are like choice morsels." What do you really like to eat? If you went to a restaurant that had anything you want, and the best chef in the world, and they said, "What would you like? Would it be crumbed fried shrimps? A choice morsel dipped in special seafood sauce, and down the hatch it goes. Ah, that's a choice morsel for me." So, choice morsels is something you love, you want more of. It's enjoyable. The other half of that verse, it starts, "The words of a gossip are like choice morsels." Then it says they go down into a man's innermost parts. They become have a permanent impact, if you like, in the heart and mind of that person. And you want more. Gossip destroys friendships. As it says in Proverbs 16, gossip separates close friends. Gossip ruins the reputations of others. With his mouth, the godless destroys his neighbor, it says in 11:9. Iago in Shakespeare's Othello said these words, "He who steals," and this is a modern translation of it, "he who steals my purse steals trash. But he who steals my name steals something that has no value to him or her, but is inestimable in value to me." We should avoid those who are gossips. We should silence gossip when it starts. Never let it go any further than you. It stops there. And even stop the person halfway and say, "Look, I don't need to know that. I don't want to think ill of that person," and stop it midstream. William Norris said, "If your lips would keep from slips, five things to observe with care: to whom you speak, of whom you speak, and how, and when, and where." But also the Bible here shows that sin is involved in listening, because you can be listening from a wrong motive, a sinful motive. It says in Proverbs 17:4, "A wicked man listens to evil lips, a liar pays attention to a malicious tongue." And then the second major influence of our words is also slander, which is a step beyond gossip. It is actually malicious. It has an evil intent. So Proverbs 11:9 says, with his mouth the godless destroys his neighbor. And you remember in James where it talks there about the tongue, that it's a fire. In Australia we have a lot of trouble with what we call bushfires or scrub fires or forest fires. And because the tinder dry season and the gum leaves of the eucalyptus tree have oil in them, it just goes whoosh, and it can be very, very devastating and very dangerous. But just one little spark. Near us we have an old steam engine that pulls a train along and through the mountains, and it's an old train that's been restored, and tourists go there, and they have the fire brigade following every time they go, because one spark in the dry season from that steam train that lands in the scrub can start a fire that can take a whole community out. And so one little spark, one little word can have incredible effect. The power also, not just to hurt, not just to influence, but the power to corrupt. And that's talking about lies. And the Bible speaks so much about lies from beginning to end. But here in the book of Proverbs, he emphasizes the folly of lies and the wisdom of telling the truth. And in Proverbs 12:22, we read, the Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. A lying tongue hates those it hurts. So you can tell the truth, however, and tell a lie at the same time. Like the captain on the ship who wrote in the log, the first mate was drunk today. The next day in the logbook, the first mate had written, the captain was sober today. Then there's flattery. It's the child of lying. It is for your own advantage saying something that is not really true, or even if it is true, you're elevating the person for your own personal advantage. And so you flatter your neighbor, and really you're spreading a net, as it says in Proverbs 29:5, spreading a net for his feet. Like it says in Proverbs 26:23, like a coating of glaze over earthenware are fervent lips with an evil heart. Outwardly beautiful. And you know what? I find that when somebody says something that is inflated about me, I know it's not true, but I like it. And I'm not going to argue with that person. That's the temptation. And then when that person then turns around and has an evil intent behind that to lead you in a direction you shouldn't or whatever, you're hooked so easily. All right, the potential, secondly, of the tongue for good. My first points tend to be longer than the rest normally, so relax. I'm going to go through this and share it with you because there's a lot of good stuff in the book of Proverbs about the tongue. The potential of the tongue, first of all, to give life. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. That's not really talking about salvation, sharing the gospel with people, but it's used in that way. But what better illustration of it? That when you sit down and share, what a wonderful thing it is, just with simple words, to take the word of God and explain it and see a person come into a living personal relationship with the Lord Jesus because of words. The power of life. And then the potential to heal wounded spirits. Reckless words, we heard earlier, pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. How often have you been encouraged by somebody's words of healing? words that bring you through, help you through that difficult time. To encourage, the anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. And I know there's people here in this church that are, I think the whole church is full of love. And when someone's down, there's phone calls, there's cards sent, and it's just, there's a wonderful spirit of encouragement. And I encourage you to keep that up, because it's a beautiful thing to encourage, to build up. Proverbs 10:21, the lips of the righteous nourish or build up or feed many, but fools die for lack of judgment. I was going through Bible college, and I was motivated to evangelism. I wanted to get out and share the gospel, and I thought of becoming an evangelist and prayed about it with Marg. And on one occasion, the principal of the school, Neville Taylor, and the evangelist who came and gave teaching on evangelism were talking together, and I overheard them. And they started talking about me, so I listened. And they said, the principal said, I think he'd be an evangelist. And the evangelist guy, Colin Graham, said, definitely. That word definitely stayed with me. It motivated me through difficult times. There was a recognition of a gift that God had given, nothing to do with me, but it was like one word that impelled me and encouraged me to pursue what I thought God was wanting me to do. One word definitely, absolutely affected my life. And so to the power of words to build up, and then the power to reward the speaker. From the fruit of his lips, a man is filled with good things as surely as the work of his hands rewards him. There's a reward for the speaker who speaks good words. That's the wisdom. That's what Solomon observed. And remember, the book of Proverbs is his observation of life. This is what I've found. This is the way I've seen it. As a wise old sage, I've seen that when a person is good with his words or her words and shares good things and builds up and encourages and so on, then this is what I find, that they actually are rewarded just like the work of their hands rewards them. Thirdly, the prudent use of the tongue. If you want to be wise, according to the book of Proverbs, these are the things we need to do. First, be honest. Tell the truth. Kings take pleasure in honest lips. They value a man who speaks the truth. You want to get along with your boss or somebody in high office? Tell the truth. An honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. There you go, Kyle. And an honest answer is like a kiss on the lips. Wise speech is restrained. A wise person will guard their lips, will be restrained in what they say. They'll hold back, they'll think about it and give a measured answer. A wise person is gentle or calm. A gentle answer, we had read to us earlier, turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You face anger, somebody's really mad at you, and if you respond with anger, of course it's going to blow up. But if a gentle answer, says this sage, this wise old man, under God's inspiration, says, it's going to turn away wrath. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. And then a thoughtful. So the wise or prudent use of our tongue is to be thoughtful, to listen carefully. And I've got here up here an acrostic thing. Think, T-H-I-N-K. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it informed? Is it necessary? And is it kind? Think before we speak. And finally, an apt answer. And that sometimes is the hardest thing, to know, how should I answer this person? And that's where, as Christians, we should depend on the Spirit of God, especially to say, Lord, help me to say just the right thing. When I stand with somebody who's grieving, or when I sit with somebody who's going through a relationship breakup or something like that, I don't know what to say. And all the training in the world won't give you the right words to say at that time. Something that is apt, something that is appropriate for the time, is so important. And we depend upon the Spirit of God for that, surely. And it says in Proverbs 15:23, a man finds joy in giving an apt reply, and how good is a timely word. And 25:11 says, a word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Apples of gold, the word you want to say in the aptness of the situation of what you say is like the setting. So what you're saying is wonderful and beautiful and helpful, but in the apt, being apt, it sets it up in a beautiful setting, like a gemstone in silver. I want to finish with that verse that we all know, the fruit of the Spirit. Because, you know, when we live our lives in the Spirit, when we walk with God, it affects our words, it affects our tongue. So I thought I'd take the fruit of the Spirit. If you're filled with the Spirit, then the evidence in your life will be the fruit of the Spirit. It's, by the way, one word, fruit. It's not fruits. So the evidence, the fruit, the evidence of the Spirit filling you is love, joy, peace, and so on. But now let's take it and apply it to words, because that's really where it can be applied. If we're filled with the Spirit, we will be filled with loving words. The fruit of the Spirit is love. We'll be expressing joyfully. It'll be worshipful. We'll be speaking with joy. Words that bring peace. Words that are patient and slow to respond. Kindness, kind words. Words that are good. Words that are true and faithful. Words that are gentle, and words that are under control, self-control. The fruit of the Spirit expressed in the way we speak. May it be true for all of us, for his name's sake.